Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Giro podcast. I hope wherever you are listening, you are well and you are safe. Today, I'm really excited about today's episode. I'm not going to lie. We're going to sort of hopefully be taking you behind the scenes of the Pro Peloton. And I am joined by two really, really nice young men, Owen Blandy and Will Gerling. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey, Jordan. How are you doing?
Good. Right. There's a bit of background, a bit of context for our listeners out there. So you guys work for EF Pro Cycling. Easy Post, as it's now called.
Name changes every year.
It seems to change every year.
Tag a sponsor on the end.
Yeah. Owen, you and I have known each other
over 5 years, at least.
I was just thinking about it. Like, when was it that, because you, our background is that you approached us, I think in either 2014 or 2015.
15 it was, yeah. It was Red Hook number one, that was it.
That's it. And you said, look, I'm looking for some kit, basically.
Yeah.
Right? And you were like, I'm essentially, in short, you contacted out of the blue saying,
yeah,
I'm a bloody strong cyclist. Do you mind if I wear your kit?
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, sweet. And then that's when East London Fixed sort of tapped you up. But you rode out in our kit for Ride 100 and came past here.
Yeah.
We hadn't even met you.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And we were outside waiting for you to come through and someone said, like, what does it look like? I was like, shit, I don't know. So sure enough.
I remember I was in the front pack and I came on the opposite side of the road.
That must be him.
Beating my chest. Yeah,
that's it. That must be him.
Yeah.
And then we've kind of stayed in contact sort of loosely ever since then. Mm. And now you are a chef for EF Easy Post, Pro Cycling
Easy Post.
Which is, really exciting. Like, we'll go into the sort of the story of kind of how that all unfolded.
Mm, sure.
And then, you know, Will, you and I have met a number of times. I think, you know, apart from the Roulette event that we were at, you did some work with Chris Hall. And
yeah,
that's how certainly how you came on my radar. And you are a nutritionist.
Yeah.
And now you're a nutritionist for EF Pro Cycling Easy Post.
Easy Post, yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
amazing. Let's talk about sort of how this podcast came about. So, you know, a few years ago, you moved down to sort of Somerset Way.
Mm-hmm.
And you would come up every now and again. And one of the times you were coming in, it was a bit of a hush-hush. You were like, well, it's not confirmed.
True, yeah.
But I might have this gig.
Yeah, that was probably last winter, I think.
Yeah.
It would have been.
December time.
Yeah, it was sort of November, December. I was in the process of interviewing for the role. Will, I'd known Will for a number of years, and he gave me the opportunity to interview for the role. It was an amazing opportunity for me. I'm a massive fan of pro cycling.
Yeah.
And from going into the chef's world and the catering world and then matching that up with my love and my passion for cycling, it was like a dream opportunity.
Mm. And so Will, obviously you are a nutritionist.
Yeah.
And you're now, are you the team nutritionist? Are you are you one of many team nutritionists?
No, I'm the only one for the team. So
that's amazing.
Head or lead, I guess, nutritionist for the moment. And then we may expand beyond that, I think, in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
But I think probably what we'll get next before that is maybe someone else to support.
Yeah. Owen. Okay, so you're the chef.
Yeah.
You're the nutritionist, the chef.
Yeah, and obviously there's... You know, they've been racing since January.
Yeah.
And I haven't worked yet this year.
Yeah, sure.
The 28th of Feb, I'll be flying tomorrow for Paris-Nice. Yeah. So there's more races than we cater for in the chef department of the team.
Unlike other teams who have, like, multiple chef buses
and
multiple chefs. I think Jumbo have 11.
11 chefs.
11 chefs, yeah.
Wow.
So quite a few compared to us.
So, we'll sort of, come back to sort of how you guys both ended up in, by the way, thanks for the drink.
Yeah, Owen. Cheers.
Owen's brought this lovely kefir, which is ginger water. It is bloody lovely. So thanks very much for bringing this up. Let's start with you.
Yeah, sure.
So how did you get, essentially, how did you become a nutritionist? What's your story before you came to EF?
Oh, well, I guess originally I started off in sport, I guess as a typical personal trainer, but then I realized that my passion, my love, my drive for knowledge was all within nutrition.
Mm.
And I just delved down that road. I went and did my postgraduate diploma.
Mm.
I decided I wanted to work in professional sport. That was 5 years ago last year. Mm. And from there, I went and did my master's degree. I did my research and master's. I was actually looking at carbohydrate dosage and frequency.
Oh, interesting.
In prolonged endurance cycling with elite athletes, one of them being the man to my right here, which is how I met him.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So he was one of my lab rats.
Probably about 2015, 16, yeah, yeah, something like that.
And was that focused on your fixed gear?
No, sort of racing, it was just... Well, you were looking for sort of amateur level athletes who were training hard.
I bumped into Justin Levine, mm-hmm. And he was like, "Do you need participants?" I was like, "Yeah, I do." Yeah. Actually, and he just like hooked me up with loads of people like Chris Hall, George Fox, Owen, and they all came in, did my study in the end. I had a few other people there, and that was specifically looking at that carbohydrate for long endurance, a lovely 4-hour indoor turbo with lots of efforts.
Yeah.
Whilst I was bleeding them. thorough enjoyment there. But after that, I was working at the same time with OnePro, which is a pro Conti team at the time.
That's right.
I did 2 years there. Then I did a year working with guys at CCC.
Yeah.
And ended up, obviously progressing and keep going to EF, which is where I am now. And I'm doing my doctorate currently.
Oh, that's amazing. So when did you start at EF? And essentially, how does that happen? How do you go from being a nutritionist that's got a handful of clients to working for a pro cycling team at the sort of the... So from the reason I'm asking that is, like, from our standpoint, obviously, I understand the industry, but also, more importantly, I am, as many as other people listening, a fan of the sport. So we see, a few... YouTube videos of what it's like behind the scenes. And, you obviously have a very intimate relationship with the riders, but it doesn't just start there. And I'm keen to sort of find out what is that process from you being a qualified nutritionist into working for the Pro Peloton?
I mean, with anything, it's going to be getting that experience and getting that foot in the door initially, for sure. I remember I got my role with EF, super randomly. I was really proactive in how much I reached out to people consistently, very consistently,
okay.
if not pesteringly. I messaged Charlie Wagelius a year before I got the job, and exactly a year to the day, I messaged him again, asking him about a job. And 3 months later, I got an email from Nigel Mitchell, who is the current nutritionist, being like, do you want to have an interview, et cetera? Like, wanted some background from me. And next thing I know, like, 4 interviews later, I got the job.
Yeah.
Pre-COVID. And then COVID happened. And obviously, that was a shambles of a year. But
yeah, sure.
That's pretty much how it started.
And Owen, I suppose, again, obviously, you've known Will, like, previously. But and I know that, you've had that sort of chefing background.
Mm.
But how do you get into being a chef in a pro peloton and essentially... I'm going to put all the Instagram links sort of below, because last year it was really enjoyable.
Yeah.
You were very generous with your time, and what you were sharing, which was really great. And it very much allowed people to be a part of your journey.
Yeah.
But I mean, you made no sort of, qualms about it. It was full gas, hard work in the back of a van, very hot.
Yeah.
And you're having to, kind of fuel an entire team.
Yeah.
And a couple of years ago, this wasn't even on the radar.
Totally not. And like I mentioned before, most of the races, the riders will eat hotel food at the end of the day. So it's when we can balance the need for specific nutrition for the team balanced against the finances and the resources of getting people to the right place.
Yeah.
But how I came to it, my foot in the door was very much Will. Will knew that EF were looking for a new chef, and he knew that I had a background in working in restaurants and kitchens. And although I worked in finance for many years, I still had that background and I still had that love for food. Yeah. And I couldn't quite find my way into that world. And so he reached out to me and said, "You'd be great." And I went from there. And the first few interviews, I remember speaking to my brother and I was like, "This will be a dream. This will literally be a dream opportunity." And I'm not holding my hands up. I moved to Somerset. I left London. I was very happy working on a farm and a retreat space. but I was dreaming. And so when it happened, this time last year, I was flying out to Paris for the first race. And I was, maybe the reason I shared so much is because I'm as big a fan as anyone.
Yeah.
And there's nothing I like better than watching a race from start to finish. Yeah. And so I had to hold it in a little bit. Like, not so much the starstruckness, but just the excitement about seeing everything from how they set out the bikes to how they do the bottles, the musettes, how it works when you've got 15 vehicles per team and you're traversing a country like a, like basically like a traveling sort of circus.
Yeah.
So it is an exciting world, and it's very interesting to be a part of.
I mean, you can hear the excitement in your voice, which is cool, you know. And obviously, you're 1 year in. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a couple of years in now. Yeah. You know, with EF. So I mean, maybe let's kind of get into the sort of details of the work. So, you know, this last weekend, hence the Flandrian flag we've got sort of behind you, was opening weekend. But obviously, we know that, you know, there's been, you know, a number of other races so far this year. You know, Oman, UAE. But for you, Will, like, when does your, because we can easily say, well, the season starts here, but I'm sure that's not where your season starts.
We may have mentioned that earlier. I mean, my season, I think the only month off I have would be October.
Yeah, really?
So that's where the riders will get some downtime. Yeah. And that's if they're not doing the Chinese races.
Yeah, sure.
And then for me, it's obviously they didn't do them last year for obvious reasons, but then it's a case of setting everything up for next season. They start to go into pre-season training. Mm. I'm starting to liaise with our sponsors to get stock sorted, to get new protocols and new things in place after the year that I just had. I did a big review with the team, sat down with them all and said what the next steps are to improve this this area of the team. Yeah. And, you know, that's what's
improve the nutrition side of the
team. Yeah.
So what did it look like before then? Or, I mean, I suppose that's maybe, you know, a bit too much of a question, but rather, what are some of the things, what's your goal? Like, what for you, if you were to kind of write out what my goal is for the team, can you sort of simplify and quantify that?
It's a great question. Yes and no. It's been in parts for me. I think last season was kind of thrown into the fire a bit after COVID because I wasn't involved in the team as much as I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And that's for, you know, loads of reasons to do with the team and finances and so on. Yeah. But as we got into it, I spent, you know, 3 months more behind doors working with the team before I even started talking to riders and spending time with riders.
Yeah.
Because there were so many things that had kind of just been left by the wayside, and then we just needed to get everything back up to where it needed to be and get some systems in place so the riders were actually in a position to be able to then work with. But in terms of the main question, what's the dream? I think the dream would be that all the riders are educated enough to be able to understand and manage their nutrition in a confident way when they turn up to a race with Owen there, that they don't have plate service like other teams, that they don't need some of this really anal approach, I guess, to nutrition, that they're confident to do that themselves with the support of a great team around them.
So that's really interesting. So, I mean, maybe we're sort of jumping ahead a little bit, but so my understanding of your role and your role as a chef is you're essentially prescribing a very strict protocol for riders at certain points during their season, and your role is to make sure that they're getting that. But what you're saying there is differently. It's giving them the ownership and belief and trust to do what is right for them to make sure that they can perform the next day.
I think, and also to answer that, in is that the riders actually race a lot less than they train.
Yeah.
So they're probably training for 80% of the year.
Yeah.
And only racing for 20% of the
year. That's very interesting.
So actually they're in Andorra, they're in Girona, they're in Monaco. Yeah. So they actually have to feed themselves, whether that's their own chef or their partner or themselves.
Yeah.
Mm. They actually need to know quantities. They need to know how to do low fiber. They know how to do low fat, high protein.
Yeah.
So when they come to a race, it should just be sort of seamless into that. Yeah. Obviously they don't have that logistical headache of what to prepare, because we take that out.
You're preparing that for them.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you said something to me last time you stopped by the cafe, and I think it was after maybe the tour, And, you know, you said, yeah, it's been a bit of getting used to. And one of the things you said is, like, these guys, when they're in race mode, they're almost like robots, as in they're there to do a task and they're there to do what they're told to do.
Mm-hmm.
And your job is to make sure that they are fueled to do, essentially to be a robot. So then to kind of have the nutrition, the fuel in their system to essentially go out and work. And it was a really interesting thing to hear because obviously, you know, from our standpoint, we're approaching a race with just love and passion, but they're working.
Yeah,
that's their job. Like, that's the, you know,
they're going to survival mode.
Yeah,
they
have jobs to do.
Like,
yeah.
they from day one, they won't take the staircase, even if it's one floor.
Mm. Interesting.
Always elevated.
Yeah, yeah.
Always just little things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll save energy anywhere they can.
I remember reading that in, I think it was Bradley Wiggins' book after he won the tour in 2012, and he said, you know, it's the small sacrifices that when they were training in, I think, Mallorca, he wouldn't walk to the beach with his kids. He'd have this little commuter bike because he's like, well, I mean, this is ridiculous. I don't want to be developing muscles. But all, you know, he's talked about how his wife was picking up the suitcases.
Mm.
It's all those small things of kind of saving energy. And yeah, you're right, going to survival mode.
Yeah.
And I think the race situations are so stressful.
Yeah.
You can't imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure many of the listeners have been in races and, you know, tight bunches, but they're so stressful that they need as much downtime and recovery time as possible. And so decision making should just be left aside.
Yeah.
All they need to know is I need to be here at this point. I drop my suitcase off there. I'm going to eat and I race here and there and there.
Yeah. Everything's absolutely programmed every single day the day before.
Yeah.
So everyone knows where they need to be and what they're doing. And
it's the same for us as well. I mean, we are there to work. Mm. So, you know, we're obviously staying in the same hotels and we're traveling with the team. And all the life admin that might take up your headspace when you're grounded at your in your home is taken away, and you are there. You're focused to work, so it's actually a really engaging.
Yeah.
That's why I love the job, because it's so fulfilling that you're in a team where everyone is so reliable.
Mm.
Every single person you can be accountable to, and they're accountable to you, and there's real ownership, and it's like nothing I've ever been involved with, really.
I think coming back to one of the points you said before as well that I wanted to say, you know, one of the big things that, you know, came from wanting Owen to be a part of this as well is that the relationship between me and the chef just needed to be so close that we're not a big budget team.
Yeah.
You know, there's only so much bandwidth that we have to be able to deal with it. And that's also part of that education focus that, you know, I don't have the ability to work with every single rider in detail every single week like I would with maybe a private client or just if I was working with five guys.
Yeah, of course.
Which is why INEOS last year had three nutritionists and other teams have multiples with bigger budgets. And how we share that and, you know, talk about nutrition and, you know, I give Owen guidelines and then give him that creative space within the guidelines and just need to know that we can trust each other, I think, for that.
Because, I mean, you're here. You've come from Somerset today, but you're off to races tomorrow.
Yes.
So you're flying out to, you said, Denmark?
Yeah, so this year we've had a food truck for about 10 years, which I used last year. It was sort of at the end of its life. And it was very much a sort of converted sprinter truck compared to Bahrain, for example. We've got an 18-wheeler,
which
expands out. And it's like,
I've seen that,
it's massive.
But so we're getting a new food truck, which I'm picking up from Denmark and driving to Paris for Paris-Nice. Yeah.
So you're off on the road, but Will, you're not.
No, I mean, actually, next week I'm going to that camp.
Okay, yes.
So I'm going to a training camp for, there'll be eight riders there and work with them. I'll be doing a bunch of testing with those guys. Actually, I'll be looking at blood bicarbonate. I'll be looking at sweat testing for sodium concentrations and then just spending some time with these riders.
So, I mean, God, I find all this stuff so fascinating. So obviously you're going to be working with eight riders.
Yep.
But you've been working with them for, I mean, okay, some I don't know. You've been working with some of them for, you know, the last few months.
Yeah,
and maybe, you know, a couple of years if, you know, you're working with them to start off with. So before you get to the camp, you know, what are some of the protocols that you're putting in, you know, if for example, like if our mechanic is not here at the minute, Danny, he's also a coach, a cycling coach. So it's very easy for him to work with a client and prescribe, okay, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. And it's, you know, using whatever sort of software platform. Mm. What's your version of that? How are you, is it calories? Is it, you know, kind of macronutrients? I mean, or are you working with their coaches about their goals to make sure they're not under sort of, you know, fed or overfed? I mean, how does it work?
When the riders, especially the new, we had a lot of new riders. We had 12 new riders this year. So a conversation with them was about just understanding where they're at, what's going on with them and learning a bit about them. Mm. I think getting buy-in with those riders as well. They don't know who I am.
Yeah.
They just, you know I'm a nutritionist. I'm like the food guy
or
something like this. Yeah, yeah. So talking to them, getting them to know them a better is one thing. Mm. The main focus initially is just to understand where they are in terms of race nutrition, because it's such an easy one to tick off. Mm. See how they're getting on with race nutrition. Is there any problems? Are there any issues? Yes, no.
Yeah.
And then building them up from obviously not taking on race nutrition levels, which is, you know, 90 to 120 grams of carbohydrate an hour.
Yeah.
They're taking on.
That's a lot.
That is a huge amount. Put that out. So that's in race.
That's in race. Yeah. So
lay that out in front of you and see how you do.
I reckon Jamie has that.
Yeah.
Most lunches when you get from the Tesco meal deal.
Exactly.
other supermarkets are available.
It's taking them from that, you know. And we had guys coming in, you know, do the baseline testing, and the guys are hitting like 70 grams an hour. You know, pro riders hitting 70 grams an hour.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, they need to be hitting minimum 90 grams an hour.
Yeah.
And there's some fluctuation within that in some stages. You know, there are definitely days where it goes easy, but like that's an easy to tick off the list.
Yeah, sure.
And then it's a case of working rider by rider, seeing what situations there are,
where's
their body composition at, look at their blood values, which is a lot of what my doctorate's looking at. Mm. My doctorate's looking more chronically with riders over a year, looking at testosterone levels, cortisol levels, how their health is affected over a year, and the amount of riders that also under fuel on a chronic level over a year as well. You know, these guys should be taking in around 6,000 to 7,000 calories on some days, but they don't. And
so that's a really interesting point, and that's a question I've got down here later on, like, because as amateurs, you know, we know the difference that a couple of kilos make going up a local climb. You know, it does make a difference. So, you know, we look to the pro peloton as people who are, you know, in great shape, they're fit. Obviously, there is that power to weight, which is massive. But surely the dilemma of if you take on more calories, it's a very simple dilemma and it's very misconstrued, but if you take on more calories, that will sacrifice your weight.
Yeah.
Is that something that you are having to battle? And at what point does it cross over into being a potentially negative, possibly disorder? You know, where, you know, riders are under fueling themselves for fear of what might happen.
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of guys don't have a context or understanding of food. They don't understand how many calories they're expending. They don't know how much protein, carbohydrate and fat is in certain items. There's more amateur people out there educated in terms of tracking their food and looking at it like that.
That's interesting.
Than some pro cyclists.
And is that because their job is just to turn up and go full gas?
Some guys are like I think, you know, some guys do just, it's very weird in a sport in that way, because, you know, you go to football clubs, they all go to the training ground. Everyone sees everyone in the hallways every single day. They train together, they work together, they go into their rooms, you know, so on. But then in cycling, you've got one guy in Colombia, you've got a guy in New Zealand, you've got in Belgium, and then all you have is their training peaks. You might have a conversation with their coach and they rock up to a race and you just assume that they're going to be in great condition.
And I suppose you're also assuming that they're following your advice.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Have there been times when you've had to, you know, say, you're clearly not following my advice?
Yeah, there's definitely some questions that come up. Like, I know if a rider's kind of lying to me in some respects. I wouldn't say I've had it that bad, to be honest. They've been probably a bit more honest about it, and they'll just go, I'm too tired and too busy. And I'm like, well, you're not. You're a professional rider.
Yeah.
Your job is to do this.
We were talking, you know, before the podcast started, we were talking about, you know, with the advent of technology in the last sort of 5 years and like whoop straps. And there is, as you say, with amateurs, quote unquote amateurs, a lot more understanding of the impact that various things have in your in your ability to sort of digest, you know, kind of like, you know, nutrients properly, you know, lack of sleep or stress, all the, you know, kind of cortisone, all these things that are sort of going in your body, like ultimately that has a really big impact on what your body is able to digest, surely. So I suppose, like, at what point do you, you know, have there been times when you've had to sort of pull them over and kind of go, are you okay?
Yeah, I think you mentioned before about this spectrum, like, are there guys with, you know, inverted commas, disordered eating? Mm. There's this definitely a huge spectrum within the team about guys that care a lot,
yeah,
and don't care a lot.
Yeah, sure.
And
sure.
How they approach that.
That's interesting.
Many of them approach it in different ways. Yeah, they just don't weigh themselves. Some of them do it, you know, so regularly and systematically and consistently that they have their own system in place.
Yeah.
And some people are just more emotional people than others. Yeah. Others are just very professional, very, like, they just do it.
Yeah.
And it's just finding out, like, who those guys are and then just steadily working with them. And there's always going to be guys, like, especially at the moment, ones I spend significantly more time with right now to enable them to be where we need them to be as a professional. You know, we have a guy who's vegan or follows a vegan diet, and, you know, we've had conversations about it, about how we can provide that food for him at a race, what we can do, and then also how he can do that healthily as well.
Because that's not the opportunity to kind of go, you know, to question his reasons for being that way. Like,
we ask them, you can question it, for sure.
I mean, from a moral standpoint, you can't really argue against
it. Yeah, sure.
And his decision, but from a performance-based standard, I mean, the stress of a three-week race trying to manage your protein intake and, I think it's very difficult.
Yeah.
It's interesting when you go there and then you see, like, what a three-week race does, like, even, like, as a staff.
Yeah.
You know, and they and like what they're doing.
It's a recovery game.
Yeah.
Recovery is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, again, that's, you know, we've just been talking about fuel for performance, but actually it's the same thing. It's that repair work. It's that recovery.
It really is.
To get ready for the next day.
Mm.
And just to also say, like, you know, to any vegans that might be listening, you know, it's, I'm not saying you can't be vegan.
Mm.
I'm just saying that there are so many more considerations that you need to just take on board, and you can't just wing it.
Yeah.
You can't come into a grand tour thinking you can be vegan and everything's going to be good, because the chances are it's not.
Mm.
You need to be, as with any of those riders, the guys that are looking to win it, they're on top of their game.
Yeah.
With every aspect of their life, food, and so on. So you need to be doing that, obviously, as a vegan as well.
It's a really interesting one. So you just referenced sort of your sort of like relationship. So, you know, you'll have, you'll be equipping these riders. You've been working with them for a few months to say, right, this is what you should be eating during your sort of training sort of period.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to race day, this is what you should be eating. So obviously this is the first race. I've got two questions. This is the first race that you're going to, where you're going to be with the team.
Mm-hmm.
So what have they been doing before? Who's been with them?
This season?
Yeah.
It'll be hotels, essentially, hotel food. Yeah.
So
someone asked me this the other day. They were like, how do you know what the hotels provide? You know, do you know it's sufficient?
Do you?
Personally, no. I don't know.
What the actual food that they give? Some of them I get asked to critique a menu that gets fired over to our operations manager.
Okay.
But actually with the development of Owen, who created like a framework within, so, you know, I mentioned about the guidelines, and he creates the recipes and these flavors and everything within that, created like that framework really that we've then used as a, what we send to hotels to say, this is what we're looking at.
This is what we need.
And it's not so much a menu, but it's just a way of saying, we like our proteins cooked like this, low fat. And, you know, it's kind of like a guideline.
Yeah, sure.
We allow them to prepare the food, of course, within the demographics of their hotel and their environment.
Yeah.
Mm.
But it's just a guideline set out for them.
Yeah, really interesting. And I mean, have you ever been in the position where you've had, you know, sort of riders or members of the team turn around and say, Like they've only got Coca Pops.
Well, I wouldn't know. They wouldn't come to me, but
I mean, you get the little things. Yeah, like sure. I just had one today. Can I have lactose-free dairy yogurt? And I'm like, well, I mean, in the middle of, depends where they are.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You know, that's a fresh produce kind of thing. You know, it's got a shelf life. Okay, so,
yeah, fine.
Depends where they are in the world.
Yeah.
And unsalted rice cakes was the other one. Like, you know, some of the, they'll want particular things. Sometimes you can provide it, sometimes you can't. But
I think the unsung heroes in the team, well, I mean, every single person is an unsung hero, depending on their workload. But the Soigneurs
work hard.
They are sort of the personal assistants to the riders.
Yeah.
So if the riders say, oh, actually, I want a fresh tub of Nutella tomorrow, or like I want, you know, a big bag of ice in the second feed or whatever, the Soigneurs will go to a supermarket. Yeah. They'll search it out. Yeah. They'll speak to the hotel. They'll speak to the next hotel on the road.
Yeah.
It's very much their job, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, truthfully, I mean, it's a bit of a shock, and it's really interesting hearing that, you know, the riders and the team are left to their own devices at hotels. I mean, of course, you know, you've kind of spec these hotels before. My assumption was that they're one of your shelves. But understanding it's just you now is really interesting. And I suppose that raises the question about budget. We'll go in, take over the hotel, you know, analyze all the supply chain and make sure that they can, you know, provide everything down to the most macronutrient. But what you're saying is, within your team at least, you're, and I suppose it's quite nice, you're trusting the riders to do the right thing so that they do their job really well.
Yeah, for sure.
And their focus on food is definitely as a fuel.
Yeah.
I've had riders come to me and say, look, we know how stressful this job is. We know that it's a 300K distance each day to travel.
Yeah.
And it's a new area. It's a new supermarket. Mm. So they're like, if the food, we'd prefer the food to be ready when we're there and cold, then we have to wait for it because they just want to fit it into their day after their massage and then go to bed. So they're not there to eat. They're there to ride. The eating is, it's a second priority, essentially.
I mean, that's the interesting thing about when it came down to like creating recipes, flavors, and like the kind of food you delivered in the end as well.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. By the end of the season, by the Vuelta, which was my last race last year, I felt like I had it down, and I really was sort of adhering to what the riders wanted. And often it is quite plain food and it's quite simple.
I mean
there was a story of Geraint Thomas, I think a few years ago, basically just eating rice and eggs during the tour the whole way through.
I mean, in his documentary that the BBC did with him on the year that he wasn't able to defend the tour, he was going into, I think it was their truck, I think, weighing out the rice like himself, and then, you know, I think a couple eggs and that was it. And I'm like, oh my god. But again, he's come here a couple of times, and I offered him a cake, and he was like, no.
Yeah.
And it was really early in the season. It was like, I think either January or February. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course. Like, you're working. You know, he's part of it in the training schedule leading up to that. So, I mean, Owen, let's talk about your job.
Mm.
So, I mean, obviously, Will's done sort of, you know, been working with the riders for a while, getting them ready, you know, from a nutrition standpoint for game day. And then that's where you, quote unquote, sort of like take over, so to speak. It was, as I said earlier, it was brilliant following your stories, but it also paved, you know, look, the UK has seen, you know, Team Sky, now Ineos, sort of take over with this huge budget, and they've got, you know, famous chefs and all of this. So it's very easy to kind of assume that's what it's like for all the teams, but, you know, obviously it's not. And I suppose like watching, you have to deal with, well, hopefully it won't be the case anymore, you know, kind of equipment issues.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually the day-to-day, okay, I'm in a new location. I need to go and get food. And you don't know if you're going to be able to get food. And there's other teams that are fighting for that same amount of food.
Yeah,
so let's talk about, you've got Paris-Nice coming up. So, you know, let's talk about what that looks like day-to-day.
Yeah, sure. Firstly, I'd like to say that Ineos actually, as I mean, sometimes they're the subject of mocking, Team Sky sort of overlord, you know, transformer vehicles. But I actually met the chef, and again, I'd seen documentaries about them having specialist chefs, and And then I went and met him, and it's a guy called John who lives in Croydon. And he was very much the same sort of person as me. And he'd come from the restaurant world and he'd found this way. And then we exchanged numbers, and then we meet halfway through the Giro and halfway through here. And he needs some mozzarella. He asked me, like, it's actually, despite all the rivalries between the races, the staff of the teams are actually quite intermingled. It's really nice sort of network.
Yeah, for sure. And you hope it would be,
Yeah, it's really friendly. So, yeah, I mean, and I think maybe this is why Will thought I would be a good person for the role, but, you know, I am actually a chartered accountant by background, so I'm quite an organized person.
Yeah.
And so I can't, for my own headspace, I can't be not organized. It just lets everything get on top of me. So I prepare a whole spreadsheet of every detail I need for the races, and I'll contact each hotel. So I've already spoken to every hotel in for Paris-Nice, and I'll essentially just put an order in, and they'll provide, it's only 7 riders if you think about it, which is actually fresh food. It's not a massive amount per day. I can do all the shopping I need to in supermarkets, and the hotel will provide. I mean, you always have to have a backup.
So what are you ordering from the hotel?
Well, essentially ingredients.
Oh, okay, fine. But you'll be cooking within your truck.
Yeah.
Your brand new shiny truck.
Yeah, exactly. But I'll also work with the hotel team. Yeah. So I can use, often use their equipment to, and it'll be in, typically we'll have our own meeting room within each hotel.
Yeah.
And so we're sort of separate dining. The riders will have their own table and the staff will eat in the same room.
Yeah.
But so we set up a breakfast table there. A food room with all the kind of snacks that we like to give them, and we know that they can just snack on and keep the calories going in.
Jelly babies.
Haribo. Haribo and rice cakes. Speculoos, that's a favorite. Maple syrup on everything.
So you, but let's talk me through race day.
Right, so, okay.
Early.
Yeah, pretty early start. I mean, it depends. That's actually, I was thinking about this podcast the other day, and I was thinking about what I'd like to talk about. And one thing I think is very relevant to people who are listening, and myself included when I was training quite hard, is that actually breakfast is personally my favorite meal, but that's a different subject. It's actually quite difficult to get right, because often you start a ride so early, and if you're out for a long day, you really want to eat sort of 3 hours before, really.
Interesting.
Or maybe two, but, and so it's quite difficult to get the calories in at an early time and then just go on the bike and ride.
Yeah.
And so pro racing often starts at 12 o'clock or 11 o'clock, depends on the day. You know, some days in Italy, there'll be a long transfer to the start. So we'll, the director sportifs each day will have an itinerary, and that will have the breakfast time. It will have the time they need to be on the bus. So it's all, and it's all calculated beforehand. So I'll start probably 6 a.m., probably get up, head to the truck, and then just start preparing breakfast, take it to the meeting room, and then I'll station myself there, and I'll cook each person eggs how they like it, each rider. And it's a really nice time, actually, because it's quite a relaxing time in the morning. They often come down in different groups. I always have like a WhatsApp group with them, or a Teams group, and I say, like, just let me know when you're coming down, because some of them, like Rigo, for example, he will maximize his recovery time.
Okay, fine.
He's very efficient and very relaxed person, and he won't ever push the limit. If there's more time to recover, and
so essentially you're saying lie in bed.
But it's a really, I do like the breakfast time with the guys, because it's before the race and they're a bit more relaxed, and it's a lovely time. So
this is probably a point where I need to ask a very important question.
Yeah.
Where does coffee come in?
So coffee, I mean, it kind of hurts me deep a little bit, but the baseline is an espresso machine.
Okay. No,
because it's very efficient and it's very clean, and it's easy for the riders and the staff to have espresso or decaf all day long.
Makes However, perfect sense.
Sorry?
Makes perfect sense.
It does, yeah. Yeah. And it's, they can, I would love to get a fancy espresso machine, but
yeah, sure.
One person to maintain it and actually produce good coffee.
Yeah, I'll come.
Yeah. Yeah. I would need someone else, yeah. Basically. But I they love filter as well. So, yeah, okay. And I love making filter myself. So yeah. I'll make that for them.
Nice.
And I like
lovely.
Putting the bag on the table.
Yeah.
So they know what's coming and they know. It's a nice, kind of like a breakfast topic. You know, they like talking about it.
Shout out workshop coffee.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. But then also some of the riders give me coffee to produce.
Lovely.
Like Owen Dahl, I think, has his own coffee brand.
Really?
Rigo's got his own brand as well.
Rigo, yeah. Jens Kukula as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, there's quite
that.
A few like really into it.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, super. Yeah, some of them have their own kettles in their room, and Hugh Carthy brings his own travel kettle. Does,
I've heard that
he likes his herbal teas.
Yeah.
There was like, you know, there's all those kind of like like legends, and you wonder if they're true or not. But it was something like Jens Voigt was notorious for having like 12 like Nespressos before a race, like just kick them back.
Well, I mean, what you've told me, you need. It's 200 milligrams really to make any difference, right?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the way, but like it's 3 to 6 milligrams for a performance enhancing effect. So, you know, most of the rides are around the 70 kilo mark.
Yeah. Oh, per kilo, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. 3 milligrams. So, you know, it's at minimum, it's a triple espresso really to see a performance enhancing effect.
Wow.
And that can obviously, if they're 70 kilos, that could be up to 6 shots as well.
And this is a question I've never asked, but does... The more energy you expend, does the caffeine leave your system quicker?
I've always assumed that.
Yeah. Because, look, there's been times where I've had like a, you know, a coffee, like usually like 12 or 1, and I'm still wired.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they're kicking back all this to get the caffeine in, or if they got caffeine gels during the race, do you see that affecting their sleep? We're going off on a bit of tangent.
They're pretty wired anyway. I feel like a lot of them.
Okay.
I think the exhaustion factor really does burn it.
Yeah, sure.
Through
yeah.
them, and we've all done long days on the bike, and you do feel tired. What?
Yeah. I've seen a couple of guys have a coffee after, well, decaf maybe.
Decaf,
actually.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But also, it's quite a late day. Often the dinners will be 9:30, or even 10 staff. p.m. And the staff always eat after, so we end up eating very late.
Yeah, anywhere between 9 and 11.
Really?
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
And because they don't want to feed the riders pre-massage or pre-chiropractor or pre-osteopath.
Yeah.
But does that, from a nutrition standpoint, are there negatives to eating late when it comes to recovery and sleep?
No, not really.
Okay, fine.
I mean, I would have thought it would affect the sleep. It affects my sleep personally.
I mean, I think it depends for a lot of the guys, because when we look at the recovery aspect, that recovery really starts from straight after the race.
Yeah.
And from a glycogen resynthesis point of view, so replenishing stored carbohydrates as quickly as possible, there's about a 4-hour window there where you want to maximize that.
And that is the recovery bottle.
That's not the core. No. So they come off. They'll get like
cherry juice, don't they?
A cherry juice.
Cherry juice.
Fancy. The secret tonic.
And then they'll get a recovery drink, which will be your standard recovery drink. Nothing special.
Yeah.
To be
sure.
Honest.
Sure. Sure.
And then they'll probably shower.
A little can of Coke. That seems to be quite popular.
Sometimes we don't have it on the bus. Actually, some guys, depending on the stage, we'll give it out at the end.
Yeah.
Some of the guys will request for Haribo or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, who's it? Sagan always used to make that. Smashing them back.
Each soigneur will have a race. It will have a cooler bag.
Yeah.
And that will have various drinks in, and they'll be at the finish waiting for a winner, hopefully.
Yeah. some of them they'll have a mixture of things, waters to Cokes and things like this. I mean, Hugh will always want Haribo at the end.
Really? How funny. And that's the best time to just
it's fine, because
is it a bit of a reward, is that a good time to have it, is there any nutritional value?
I mean, it's 100% nutritional value. I mean, not so much in micronutrient density, but in terms of you get like a translocation. So a transporter moves from the muscle membrane to the wall, and it actually allows you to draw more effectively in carbohydrate.
Interesting.
Which is why there's that around 4-hour window. I'm not talking about protein here or like that post-workout window people typically talk about, of like 30 minutes or whatever they say. It is about this, the activation and using of the muscles brings this transporter to the cell membrane, and it allows you to bring in that carbohydrate so much more effectively.
Yeah.
And you're essentially looking to maximize that to, you know, from stage to stage, you want to get as topped up again as quickly as possible.
Interesting.
And if anything, you know, they'll have obviously a reasonable dinner, but I don't think for the most part they're like stuffing themselves.
No, it's true.
Like
it's interesting, isn't it? Like, because I mean, I suppose it's this because this is their job. Mm. You know, they understand that if they do sort of like gorge, there will be sort of like negative.
They'll feel bloated in the morning. Yeah, for sure. Like a lot of them will naturally taper. They'll have more after the race.
Yeah, fine.
And it will steadily taper off. They'll have a few snacks, a couple of snacks around the massage before or afterwards. And then they'll go down to dinner. And dinner will be on the smaller side typically to the grandeur of the meals over the day.
And so getting back to it, so you feed them breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And what would that look like? I mean, will it depend rider to rider, or is there a bit of a sort of set theme that it kind of works?
It's probably the most set theme of the meals. So, yeah, I mean, each rider will have an omelette, three eggs. Mm. I mean,
typically
depends. Alberto has one and three, so one whole, three whites. Hughes, two and two.
Mm.
TJ, who's now a director for the team, not riding anymore. He had two fried eggs usually, sunny side up.
Mm.
But overnight oats.
Yeah.
I sometimes do porridge on a cold day, but overnight oats, I think it's just a little bit more digestible.
And what quantities are we talking?
I will do a kilo of oats eight riders. And then I do it really simple. Like people like to put chia seed, chopped apricots, cinnamon. Fine. I actually just do like a plant-based milk, bit of salt, bit of cinnamon or nutmeg. Mm. And I actually don't really sweeten it because at the breakfast table, I've got all the honeys, I've got all the maple syrups.
Yeah.
So I allow them to flex it.
Yeah, sure.
So they know that they're just getting that base carb, essentially, that they can do what they like with it.
So we're talking, obviously, protein.
Yeah.
Obviously, if it's egg whites and it's reducing some of the fats. And then carbs.
Yeah, and then rice. Well, I'll do a bowl of plain rice for breakfast
in
for
the
them.
Morning.
Yeah, and then I'll do...
Most of
them will have that, especially on a time trial day.
Yeah, interesting.
But there's also cereals, mueslis, Rice Krispies are really low fiber, a really good option.
You've mentioned that a couple of times. So talk to me about high fiber, low fiber, high fat, low fat. We've talked about carbs, talked about proteins. But, you know, with regards to fats, with regards to fiber, like what are you guys trying to avoid?
So this is something where, like, the relationship between me and Will is very close. Yeah. And he won't say, I want them to have chicken and pasta tonight, or I want them to have fish. He won't dictate the menu to me, but he will say, oh, there's three quite intense mountain days coming up in Italy.
Yeah.
Let's do low fiber. Let's do low fat proteins.
And is that about weight saving?
So the fiber thing, it's a combination of two things. Some of the guys may take on... that I may be working with directly to say, let's do a low residue, low fiber diet. And you can lose around anywhere between half a kilo to a kilo from following low residue for about 4 to 5 days.
Wow.
So that's quite significant.
That's a lot of weight,
That they can lose for a particular stage. So we can time that for a rider for a stage.
It's essentially what Garen Thomas was doing, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, there was that famous, Jay and I were talking about it before, there was the 2018 Giro d'Italia where Chris Froome went on the attack did that solo.
Amazing. Yeah.
And the story around it was they lost weight and he recovered throughout the race ready for that day. And you're listening to it going, bullshit.
Yeah.
But apparently not.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just amazing.
Yeah, there's minute details and those percentage points adding up.
I mean, you can get real geeky about it. You can look at like hydration factors, and purposely have someone get slightly dehydrated for a particular climb.
So water retention, basically.
More about like just knowing how much someone sweats at a certain temperature. Obviously, that can change quite a lot in the race. Yeah. Intensity can change, which is why it can be a bit of a cautious one, maybe. But like you can purposely slightly underhydrate. Yeah. Because there's a scope where it won't affect your performance and then you can end up doing a climb slightly lighter for that. It's not something that we've done for the guys last year, but it is something that people do try and do.
That's fascinating. I think that's amazing.
It is. It's very interesting.
Being able to, because I remember hearing that and kind of going, yeah.
Yeah,
but real understanding actually, you know, I mean, using what the two of you are doing as a tool really. Yeah. I think that is absolutely amazing.
I mean, the low fiber thing is also because the preference, right, for the guys. Like, they just don't like to feel full.
Yeah, sure. Very, very interesting. Very interesting.
I mean, there's obviously a tipping point. You do need to be able to get fiber through your system.
Yeah.
And you do, you know, you want to process the food properly. And and that is a real consideration because you imagine your body going through 3 weeks of racing, racing at, 2 degrees, 0 degrees at the top of the mountain, and then going to valleys, temperature change, just sweat, everything. There's so many variables. So digestion and how they cope with it is a massive point.
Okay, so we're getting there. So so breakfast, eggs, carbs,
and then fats. So
I mean, it's not that important. We can sort of come back to that.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, we can talk about that.
Because it's fine.
I mean, look, in the last, you know, sort of like, let's say 10 years, like an individual, whether it be pro or amateur's access to understanding around nutrition is probably better than it ever has been.
Yeah.
Mm. But there is also so much stuff out there, and it's not that there's a lot of bullshit, but there's a lot to sort of take in and a lot to understand. So the understanding around the hype winds around ketogenesis and so getting everything from like fat stores.
There's not a single guy in the peloton that's doing keto.
Exactly. There's a lot of people that say they are, but they're not. Like
guys might do it outside of the race.
Exactly.
But nobody in a race is doing keto.
Yeah. Well, they might take ketones during the race.
Ketones, would be different.
I mean, that's a relatively newer sort of, you know, sort
last
development.
3 years, really.
Where does fat come in? From your standpoint, where do fats come in a diet, either leading up to or during a race?
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously important. There are factors within it that improve health because obviously over a 3 week race, health can be affected.
Yeah.
Especially for, you know, we definitely look for oily fish quite regularly through a race because of omega-3, the anti-inflammatory effects. There's also some muscle protein synthesis effects for them. And that is pretty important. And they will supplement with that as well alongside. And a rider will have a total caloric requirement for a day. Protein is obviously the driving force of muscle recovery and adaption to what they're doing and aiding of muscle inflammation. Then carbohydrate is the main source of fuel that they're doing. And, you know, through all the research that we still have and it's still coming out, you know, carbs are king. Yeah. They will always outperform a fat-based diet for endurance-based sport. And at the closest, they'll be, you know, equivocal. So, but fat, that, you know, high fat diets will never outperform a high carb diet in terms of performance. And the fats there are going to be ultimately then for, as I said, health.
Yeah.
And then kind of filling up the rest of the calories potentially for the day after you've got the essential amount of carbohydrate and protein that they need.
Interesting. And I mean, with regards to, you know, obviously there's more calories and carbs.
Calories and fat than carbs, you mean?
Yes. Sorry. How are you working with them, with riders, to get to race weight? Is that something that you take into consideration? And does that change the macronutrients of what you're doing?
Yeah, the ratios in terms of the lead up to a race and then getting them into the right shape and body composition. Yeah. So definitely, because, you know, this sport is glycolytic in nature. It is carbohydrate dependent.
Yeah.
So when we look through a week, you look through the rides that they're doing, there is certain rides that have more of a carbohydrate requirement than others. So you get a bit more flexibility in easier endurance-based rides or recovery days.
Yeah.
But on, you know, rides where they're doing 3, 4, 5, 6 hours and it's got efforts in it that they need to perform for, then the carbohydrate comes first, and then you work out what their calories need requirement for the day need to be based upon the session at hand.
Yeah.
So for some of the guys, you know, I had one of the guys actually drop 6 kilos for UAE from, you know, off season weight to UAE, and
it's a lot of weight.
It's a lot of weight.
Yeah,
he's not a tall guy either.
No, but he's pretty big anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, he lost that weight over a period of time. I think it was just over a month that we did that in. I think 5 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge amount. Does the body, in his case, and I suppose you're working with, does it give any kickback to when he does start taking on sort of calories again? Does his body...
No, it shouldn't do because, because carbohydrate status stays high.
Yeah, sure.
That he's constantly replenishing and still staying around the kind of carbohydrate water weight that he should be at. We're not depleting him.
Yeah, fine.
Whereas obviously if you went low carb, that's you're going to lose a whole bunch of water and glycogen and everything like this.
Yeah.
So there's going to be that kind of that would come back on at a race. Mm. And riders do that.
Mm.
And a caveat or another facet of that maybe even is that if you have a lot of high fat stuff over carbs, you're going to downregulate your ability to utilize carbohydrate, become less efficient at it. So it's probably not the best thing to do in the end to a race.
All right.
That's the whole thing.
So we went off a whole other
thing. Yeah.
So you fed them breakfast.
Yeah.
They're in the transfer. Go to this.
So I'll typically be the last person to leave the hotel. Actually.
Yeah, sure.
The guys will be off on the bus.
Yeah.
The soigneurs will, half of them will go with the bus and in the race cars. And there's a hotel team, which is two mechanics and two soigneurs. The mechanic's truck will drive, the soigneur truck will drive with all the suitcases.
Mm.
And then I'll make my own way and we'll meet at the next hotel,
sure.
which is usually a 2-3 hour drive.
Yeah.
We have a nice lunch. This is our downtime.
Oh, nice.
We have a staff lunch, the six of us or five of us. Watch the race, go and nap. I usually...
Wine.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Beer and wine, get drunk. I usually sometimes go for a run or explore the town in a COVID safe way.
Yeah.
And then start preparing for the dinner, essentially. Yeah. So when every time the race is going on, I'm essentially sort of resting
Sort
of like
makes sense.
Planning ahead, basically.
Yeah.
But they... I'll also make them a packed lunch.
I was going to say, that's the interesting bit. So how are you two working together and what are they eating
on
leading
the
up to the race and on the bike? Yeah, yeah.
So on the bike, I actually don't have any, I mean, I've designed some of the rice cake recipes, but I don't have any input on the race day.
Okay, fine.
It's the soigneurs and Will obviously structure it before the race and he'll help out if he's at the race for sure.
Yeah.
But typically they're eating many of the sports products we all consume, the gels, the powders, all of that.
So that's one of the questions I've got down here because, I mean, obviously, you know, like, you know, any sort of pro cycling team is a business and it relies, you know, wholly on sponsorships and endorsement deals, you know, and I'm not sure what the brand, the EF.
Never Second. Is it a sports nutrition?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, okay, fine.
Never Second. Yeah.
I mean, from your standpoint, I mean, do you have a say as what they get? I mean, you know,
yeah,
and what, yeah, yeah, sure. I mean, because we were saying earlier, I mean, a lot of it, I kind of sometimes feel that some of these brands, they rely a lot on marketing and, you know, some of their guides on how much they should be consuming just seems way too high for the majority of people. But obviously, you know, you're dealing with the riders who are at the absolute pinnacle of sort of energy in, energy out. So you're happy to be working with these companies, happy to be working with these sort of nutrition brands.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I mean, I was kind of going to say I want to get through the day of what Owen does it in a bit, and then maybe come back to it before we digress a bit more, if that's good.
Yeah, yeah. So you've made them a packed lunch. Packed lunch, apple, banana, sandwich, crisps.
Yeah, just juice.
In the Spider-Man
one of those crazy yogurts. Yeah.
That's right.
A little toy in the corner. It will basically, we call it bus food.
Yeah.
And that is, I mean, it's usually rice and chicken.
Yeah.
It can be sometimes gnocchi and tomato sauce and then sort of tuna or salmon. And it's basically, I make eight of them.
Yeah.
So one per rider and then one for the finish bag. So if they win a stage, they're often held in doping control media.
Sure.
So like
the soigneur will have an extra meal for them.
Yeah,
and all it is just getting that carb and that protein balance, just real food, you know, that they can eat on the bus on the way to the next hotel or, as I said, at the finish line. And I do that every day, and I give that to the bus driver in the morning. He puts it in the fridge. And these buses are like, you know, state of the art.
They've got
amazing fridges, microwaves, rice cookers, everything they need.
Coffee machines.
Yeah. Sound systems, dodgy European music. It's got it all. So they'll get the bus food, and then their transfer will, after the race, they'll come to the hotel. And still, they'll arrive at the hotel at 6, 7 p.m. sometimes. Yeah. And it'll typically be 2 hours after they arrive until dinner time. Mm. So dinner is never before 8:30, yeah. 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Very rarely.
I mean, that's when you're talking about sort of recovery, that seems so late. Yeah. But I suppose they're eating throughout the day. It's, you know, yeah. It is what it is.
Yeah, because they'll wake up there. They'll have that meal 2 to 4 hours, like breakfast. It's typically 2 to 4 hours before the race. Mm. They'll get on the bus. They'll snack on some bits before it even starts, like bits of brioche or a rice cake or whatever. Mm. Then they'll race. Obviously, they'll eat throughout the race. Mm. They'll finish, have that cherry juice, that recovery shake. They'll have that meal, the bus meal. They'll probably potentially have another couple of snacks on there. Mm. Come back, they'll snack whilst they're going to their massage and so on. And then afterwards, then they'll have dinner. And then some of them may snack again after dinner. Mm. Yeah. So they're continuously eating through the day, really. Yeah.
And then you clean up, go again the next day.
Yeah, and I quickly found out the way to work is smart and hard, not smart, not hard. Mm. But the hotels, it's quite interesting, but the hotels are all booked by the race organizer. So it's not the team who book the hotels.
Yeah, sure.
And so it's luck of the draw who you get, which team. Sometimes we're on our own. Sometimes we share with 4 teams, 5 teams, 2 teams. Yeah. The hotel staff are generally very helpful.
Yeah.
And they're very honoured to have a team stay there.
That makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
So they will actually help me a lot. Yeah, and I use them to help me clear up because I just don't have the energy to and the time on my feet to it's a long day.
You use a lot of their kit, don't you? So
yeah, I use a lot of their kit and I use a lot
just
of
just give it back to them to watch.
Some days I will cook in their kitchen in the hotel.
How many teams have one chef?
You probably know that better than me.
Most teams have one and a helper basically.
Okay, fine. Interesting.
Yeah, most of them have that helper on top.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Which is essentially, if I'm at a race, I'll help if I can, but it depends on the day. Yeah.
But then some teams need someone else because they've got such a big vehicle.
Yeah.
Having a small 3.5-ton vehicle means you can drive and set up in half an hour. It takes Team Ineos an hour to set up the truck and put all the stabilizers on and all of that.
I mean, some of the teams have, dining trucks as well.
Yeah.
They have like a dining room, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
Ineos and Bahrain do.
Yeah, yeah, really. Yeah. I think it was Bahrain.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, Bahrain's massive.
And then do you allow the guys to drink?
I mean, I don't not allow them. I'm not.
Yeah, I get asked if they can drink.
Yeah.
I've seen last year, I think it was the Vuelta, and I was on the staff table with the directors. The director sportifs, and they were just like we were all chatting, and they were like, "Oh, some of the boys are having beers." And I think it was a regular day, or it was on the rest day, which means there's a stage the next day or something. It was definitely not a day where you'd be like, "Oh yeah, they can have a drink."
Yeah,
but then I mean, you can answer the nutritional.
Yeah, I mean,
a quick photo to Will.
Yeah, I mean,
I get that.
Yeah.
I get people dobbed in. Yeah.
There's obviously champagne when you win.
Yeah, yeah.
Champagne
of course,
goes
round. Yeah.
They drink that.
Yeah, and we drink it. The staff drink it. Everyone drinks it. It's
That's
great.
Nice.
Yeah.
In terms of alcohol, the guys are pretty much if they want what they're allowed one on the last stage before the rest day.
Okay, fine.
That's also typically where Owen gets a bit more increased levels of flexibility in terms of the food provided, typically like adding red meat, more fibrous foods, things like this.
On the day before the rest day?
Literally the stage finishing to go into the rest day.
Yeah, gotcha. So the day they are digesting, they're not
racing.
They're not racing.
And so will you get requests?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Usually hamburgers. Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Just burgers. just some proper food.
It's usually red meat, yeah.
But then also I do a nice hamburger.
Yeah, sure.
Make it.
Yeah.
Or steaks. But, get some really nice meat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I think you're underselling some of the food you do as well. Like the bus food he's talking about just being plain rice and stuff like this. He has a great way of adding twists and light fragrance and flavor to something without being overpowering. Because the guys don't want it overpowering. They just don't want it too strong.
Yeah.
Mm. But like you add this like kind of ginger or different fusion flavors to the rice, to the food, to make it still taste really
enjoyable. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But fresh.
If you're serving a serving plate of a kilo of rice every evening, you've got to flex it, and
yeah,
but then you don't want to make it unappetizing and then not it,
yeah, and at least it's that sort of one moment that you're giving to them an experience as opposed to just another routine in the day.
Yeah, and I will often, I mean, the reason I didn't go into restaurant cooking, or I did go in and came out of it, was because I want to interact with the customer, and I interested in the final product.
Yeah.
And so I often do ask them, I'm saying, how's the food? And do you want anything different? And
you sit down with them sometimes.
So. I do sit down with them and they often don't say any requests really. Yeah. Again, because I think they're just, they're above that. Yeah. They're kind of, I don't need to deal with that. You know, if something's wrong, they'll tell me, but I haven't really
Of course. It's interesting because, I mean, their expectations are that they don't have to, all they're there to do is ride, and they don't want any distractions. They don't want any kind of negatives that's going to impact on doing, allowing them to do what they're supposed to do.
Mm. And at the end of the day, it's quite simple food.
Yeah.
Where I'm not doing anything that complicated. Yeah. It's not, it's any good home cook could do it, really. Yeah. It's more of a logistical challenge, the job.
Do they, I mean, maybe this is, I don't know. I mean, obviously they're there to do a job, but do they show interest in what you do, how you do it? In your line, do some of them rely on other people to do their cooking? Do they like cooking? Like, as in?
Yeah, I do get questions.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Often around some of the stuff I'm doing the off season, so a lot of about bread and.
Okay, yeah, cool. Like Michael, banana bread.
Yeah, banana
famous
bread.
Banana bread, yeah.
Or
yeah.
sourdough as well. And Michael Valgren is really into kombucha.
Okay.
And sourdough. Fine. He's been sending me stuff.
God, what a hipster.
Yeah, well, you know.
So he lived in Shoreditch as well, isn't
he? Yeah, he said he tried it in lockdown, like most of us. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's hilarious.
But they're generally pretty receptive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, love it.
Mm.
I mean, I've personally got one other question, and then it's really cool, we put it out on social media, we put it in a few of our WhatsApp groups, and this is without doubt the best sort of response we've had. We've got loads of questions. I'll hopefully be able to get through some of them. Jamie has taken the time to color code them.
I like it.
So I suppose the interesting, you know, sort of bit I have, like, obviously majority of people listening and kind of the way that we approach sort of cycling is after like a long day on the bike or after like an intense period, there's that. Or if you're racing, you get to sort of the end of the season, you can kind of just switch off a bit. You can have a couple of beers. You can kind of not worry about nutrition. Is that a battle that you face with pros does there come a point where you have to be the strict teacher to be like, I'm glad you've had a good time, but stop dicking around?
It's pretty much January.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
But I never have to be that, to be honest. Sure. Like, you know, I work with the guys over November, December, and you know, I look at their food diaries and things if they are doing that for me at that time. Some of them do, some of them don't. Yeah. And there are beers in there. Yeah. There are, you know, festive foods and things like this, as there should be, because it's important for them to have a break mentally and also not to over worry. There's so much. There is a lot of disordered eating, both amateur and within the peloton.
Yeah.
And it's a really conscious effort that I try and make to not get them worried about their food, to not over obsess about certain items, to just, you know, it's fine. Have that thing. It's about making it work, the big picture. Mm. It's the big picture, really. Yeah. Like, are they healthy? Are they performing well and turning up to races in the right condition?
Yeah.
And you can do that having certain foods and certain items.
I mean, in like most things in life, it's a question of balance, really. Yeah. And you need to balance that mental fatigue of being strict with yourself, but also allowing yourself the things you enjoy in life. Life's too short even for a professional sportsman, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's a really great book that I've taken a lot from this year, and it talks about, you know, it's going through this whole sort of nutritional thing, and it talks about alcohol, and it's, and you know, they said, well, if you're sat there kind of like stressing and missing out on like a really nice dinner with friends, and you're choosing not to have that kind of like gin and tonic because you want to be, you know, you're kind of putting yourself under this pressure not to, like, don't worry about it.
The stress hormones counterbalance.
Exactly. There's that, what you get from enjoying. And of course, and exactly as you say, everything's in balance.
Mm.
But I suppose from your standpoint, I mean, you know, also these people, are, you know, as I'm saying this, I'm forgetting these people are professionals. And if they show up to a race out of shape and not putting in the time, they won't have a contract.
Yeah, yeah. Unless they're getting results still.
Yeah, yeah. And then you're like, fair play.
Yeah, exactly. Then you're just like, where's the science? Like, yeah. What's happening
like
here?
Cipollini was famous for, like, you know, smoking and kind of doing all the rest of it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, most of the guys I you know, I went to the camp in January. We had a camp in Girona. You know, do skin folds, chat to the guys, etc. A lot of the guys are coming in 1 to 2 kilos above where you'd say, like, peak race weight would be.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not a lot.
It's not, yeah. You know, and 1 to 2 kilos you can lose, you know, between that camp mid January to the first race in February, if that's where they need to be for that race.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're really cold races. They're not too much elevation in them. So there is some flex there between certain riders as well.
So when you say cold races, is that as they're out in the cold, they're going to be consuming more calories? Is that what you're saying? Or
no, that, like, you know, if they're super, super lean, like Tour de France lean,
yeah,
you know, they're going to feel that cold significantly more.
That's interesting. All right. So let's get to some of these questions. I mean, there's definitely a really nice balance here of questions about Pro Peloton and then also just questions about what should I be eating? So we'll get through some of this. But before we wrap things up, massive thanks, guys. This has definitely been a personal favorite of mine. I feel like I've learned loads. But anyway, we'll get to these questions. So from our very own Danny, is he in Australia yet?
He's currently
in Australia. How much rice do you get through in a grand tour?
kilo a day at least. No, probably 2 kilos a day. And that's not even the rice cakes. The soigneurs make the rice cakes. So it must be 3 or 4 kilos a day times 21, 60 kilos maybe. Wow. I'll try and add it up this year.
Yeah, you could do that instead of the egg count.
I don't know how many grains. I'm just
You know how many eggs you go through in a grand tour?
Oh, yeah, the famous egg counter.
Yeah.
The famous egg count.
Yeah, yeah, that's like, what was it, like 600 odd, 700?
God, I love eggs. So, looking through these, a few of these questions we've covered.
Yeah.
So I'll just kind of like skim through some of them. Sure. Weirdest food request from a rider?
Oh, that's probably for you, mate.
Huh? Yeah, it probably is for me. It's tough, actually. I can't think of anything that strange. Cheesecake? Someone wanted cheesecake on the rest days.
Oh no, what about you get crostata? You have to cook
Alberto really wanted to do like an Italian style crostata
made just like his nonna,
so okay. he sent his mum's recipe to me.
That's really nice.
Yeah,
I love that.
And then his mum and girlfriend turned up a week later with two
amazing.
Yeah, it's really
instructing
fun.
You how to do it. We've had complaints.
Yeah. That's great.
Okay, so, I mean, we've sort of covered this, but it's an interesting one. Are riders weighing their food these days or focusing more on the quality of nutrition? And then how knife-edge is the weight loss?
It's a mixture. So a big focus for me this season has been working with a lot of the riders to do food diaries for 2 to 4 weeks where I get them to weigh, track their food.
Yeah.
But that's for them to, I mentioned earlier, that context, to get that understanding of food, to review it in relation to their training, give them that guidance, that knowledge and understanding about, okay, like, this is where you need to make some changes. Mm. We leave it there. And then I'm going to come back to that later on this season where obviously there'll be a point in the season for most riders where they'll have a bit of a break. That break may only be like 2 weeks.
Sure.
I'll come back to it then. Yeah. We'll review it again and see if there's made changes.
That understanding piece, I think, is amazing because you know, there's just the assumption that you make that sort of they know, you know, because that's their job. But actually, like, there's, you know, some of them don't know.
Some of them are young, though.
And for you, exactly. And for you to kind of say, actually, my goal is to really give them the understanding so that they can make the best choices. That's so refreshing. Like, that's really amazing to hear. I was expecting I tell them to eat this and they eat that and, you know.
No plate service here.
No, yeah, absolutely. Are finish line bottles still a thing?
Yeah, very much
yeah,
so.
Yeah, definitely.
Kind of covered that. All right. So, yeah, we've come that one. Sorry, Jamie. okay, we've got one from Franco. God, he's been putting in a lot of questions recently. So, he's doing the Mallorca 312. What should he be eating in the week leading up to, or any other ultra style event? And should protein be a part of his race nutrition during these longer type rides and events?
No.
No to protein?
No. I mean, if it's a 1 day event, no.
Yeah.
Like even 2 days, no, not really. For an ultra endurance event like that, he just needs to make sure he's got like enough calories in.
Yeah.
For 312, which is happening, what, in April?
No, it's end of March.
It's end of March. March, so, yeah, not too far away then. So he's be practicing his race nutrition without a doubt for 8 weeks before that. So he should start now.
Okay.
Every week, twice a week, doing his race nutrition as much as he can for whatever sessions he's doing. Mm-hmm. If it's only once a week, because obviously what maybe works, probably works.
Yeah.
On a weekend, you know, doing that on the weekend and
probably not change his normal diet that much.
That's interesting.
Don't flex it too much.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, keep with the foods he knows.
Yeah.
He can easily throw a spanner in the works, suddenly going like, oh, carb load, I'm going to have ice cream. Shit himself the next day.
Learn to love rice.
That's one of the things that, like, whenever we go away for trips, that's like the best thing about going away is just that understanding, well, I can just eat a shitload and I'll be absolutely fine. But your body's like, oh, give me a break, please.
Yeah. And the carb load, like the week leading off, you can do a carb load in 1 day, aiming for around 10 grams per kilogram body weight of carbohydrate.
Yeah.
So it's a good day.
No question. But one statement from our very own Chris Hall. Two legends. Cheers, Chris.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy.
There's a few. I'm going to read this one from Bruno. There's a few questions that are sort of like this. So hopefully for anybody that's kind of put in something.
Sure.
Thing is, nutrition for a hard, hilly, two-hour road ride. Just carb mix and bottle sufficient.
Sure.
Yeah, for 2 hours. Yeah. That's the sort of riding I do in Somerset.
Yeah. You're not really into kind of a protocol.
Yeah, I mean, sort of a sachet.
I mean, there'd be
sachets each.
Are you wanting like specifics, like what it would be or like?
I mean, I suppose it comes, actually, maybe there's a lead on question that I've got from this. So obviously you're trying to get these guys in when they're racing to eat.
Yeah.
So, and you hear it you see it in the documentaries or the YouTube behind the scenes things. You've got the guys telling him, guys, don't forget to eat. Don't forget to drink water.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously with the trying to sort of avoid the dreaded bonk. But I mean, you know, is it also a case of when they're hungry, as in listening to their bodies, as in to be like, well, actually, I'm not going to eat. I don't need it.
Mm.
Or is it always, no, just keep eating?
I think they probably know they're going to be in a deficit, so they probably know to keep eating.
Keep eating,
but then it depends on the stage of the race.
Yeah.
And touching back on what they put in the musettes,
they
will put all the nutritional branded bars and gels in.
Yeah.
But they will also put, you know, they'll go and buy one of those banana breads, like a sorine, and they'll chop that into squares and put that in there. You'll see at the beginning of races, villagers often will have plates of cake and the riders will take it out when they're going through the neutral zone.
Love it.
There's, you know,
just like Jira.
Little brioches.
Yeah, exactly.
Little brioches, ham, jam, you know.
Yeah,
all sorts.
Real food in the Musette. Like, standards will be rice cakes and bananas.
Yeah.
As we said, rice cakes, I gave like the requirements that I wanted it to be.
Mm.
Owen developed the rest, like how that fits together, essentially to be a good rice cake. And then that's what this one is now deliver.
But I mean, you know, 2 hour hard road ride, just eat if you're hungry.
You could get away not eating, really.
Yeah, get away not eating. They'll be fine with the carb drink and the bottles. Yeah. I'd say for them, it's also pretty important, though, to make sure you're starting that really hard two-hour session in the right status. If you start that ride in a low, like, depleted state, they're probably still going to struggle. So I'd just make sure that maybe having something beforehand and hydrating beforehand as well. Make sure you don't go into it dehydrated.
Yeah, interesting. I suppose that comes back to the bit I was saying earlier on about some of that, these kind of like big sort of nutrition brands. Is I think there's, and we see all the time in the cafe, we see, you know, people with this kind of false understanding of, well, I have to eat X amount of, you know, gels per hour. And it's like, well, you probably don't.
Mm.
But again, if you're happy doing it, whatever. But the reality is you probably don't need to be eating as much as you are.
Mm.
And then you're coming in a big.
I think there's this big maybe misunderstanding. And then the avid, ambitious amateur who sees what pros do, Like, the, you know, the, it, from many aspects, from whether it's 90 to 120 grams an hour, which I said to you earlier, that what the riders have in a race, which is a lot. And also snapshot of Chris Froome's meal for the Giro, where he's or a big like 6 hour train ride, and all he's had is avocado and eggs.
Yeah,
and people are like, oh, that's keto. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, well, that's a snapshot in his day.
Yeah.
For also who someone who is within the one percentile of the world.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing. I mean, we, you know, your guys' job is dealing with these guys who are at the pinnacle, at the peak of their sort of, you know, exertion, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's not a little coffee ride for them. This is, they've been training for months for that day or for that sort of stage. Yeah, really interesting. Owen, have you ever made butter pie for Hugh Carthy, a Preston delicacy?
I think I know who that
Will,
came
does,
from.
Does that get the nutritionist approval?
I haven't made butter pie yet, no.
I don't even know what butter pie is.
Like lardy cake, maybe?
Something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Butter and pastry, yeah. the French do it pretty well.
Okay, interesting. So there's a few that kind of like we've gone over here. Nutrition cooking advice to get over... Nutrition cooking advice to get over a hangover and out riding. Probably not a huge issue in the EF camp.
Right.
Huh?
Yeah, it's cooking, mate.
What's that?
Cooking advice to get over a hangover and go out riding.
What to eat in the morning or to...
I'm guessing. Oh, is that butter
pie? That's the butter pie.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Is that literally just butter in wrapped in pastry? Oh, right. Wow.
Cooking advice, I'd say probably keep it liquids, really. Keep it like coffee and I bottles.
I put some vitamin C in there. Probably.
Yeah, vitamin C.
Yeah. Learn to love rice. And rice is absorbent, you know.
Learn to love rice.
Yeah.
All right. So, again, there's a few more of this type of questions. So I will sort of like... early morning workouts, what time... Oh, early morning workouts without time to digest breakfast.
Yeah.
Are there ways to quickly and efficiently fuel beforehand?
Yeah, 100%.
I think overnight oats and then just blend them.
Okay.
And then you're sort of partially digesting them a little bit.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it will speed up. It's like if you mash a potato, you increase the glycemic index of it because you're already partially breaking it down.
Right. Mashed potato.
Yeah.
But if it, I mean, think about the type of session. If it's an easy session, they don't actually need anything.
Yeah.
That's purely preference. If they're going out for hard chain gang kind of thing where they're going to work really hard really early in the morning, just getting up, having a glass of juice and a slice of toast with jam will also be super quick, straight into the system. That'll be peaking in their blood about 15 minutes afterwards.
Yeah.
If they're riding when that happens, that'll be fine because obviously blood glucose will be rising.
They'll be
doing exercise, so then it'll be transported into the muscle to utilize. It won't be just spiking blood sugar randomly somewhere.
Very interesting. What's the best... I mean, again, these are, you know... These are pretty, you know, a lot of them is, what should I be eating? But so apologies. What's the best thing for fueling in rides over 100 miles?
Oh, I mean, I'd like to hear your take on that for your beast lap of Spain.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends if you're doing a one-day 100-miler or you're doing several. But, yeah, I mean, oats is a great start. Mm. You can't go wrong with oats
Rice?
To start. You can eat rice, but I'm not sure many amateurs eat rice in the morning. Rice pudding, actually, is a lovely breakfast. If you don't fancy porridge or overnight oats,
yeah.
Rice pudding, coconut milk.
100%. I think rice pudding is actually a decent option. Was it for the breakfast?
It was just fueling for 100 miles, rides over 100 miles.
Yeah, and just eat a couple of things every hour, really.
Yeah.
Minimum requirement, I'd say, is at least 60 grams an hour in terms of carbohydrate during that ride.
I mean, that is a lot.
Yeah.
Two bars, three bars, three small ones.
Yeah.
An hour,
Over an hour. I mean, that just seems like a huge amount.
And often, like, we're all quite good cyclists and quite fit. You don't feel like you need it, really. Yeah. But maybe then you'd consume them later in the day. You know, sort of binge-y when you get home.
I mean, you know, so today I was able to get out for like a short ride, hour and a half, didn't have any food. I had a little sort of like a electrolytes carb drink that I'm sort of trying at the minute. 20 grams of carbs. And, you know, yeah, I felt fine. You know, I knew it's a short ride. It's an hour and 40 minutes or so. But I suppose if I didn't have anything, are you going to pay for that later on?
Yeah.
Yeah. As in, if you're not kind of doing 60 grams.
We're trying to make it as sciencey as possible, as concisely as possible.
Yeah.
But still manageable. So glycogen stores at a typical zone 2 pace, if you know what your zone 2 is going to run out at around 90 minutes.
Okay.
All right. If you're a very well-trained rider, you've been riding for 20 years, chances are you're going to be pretty efficient. You're going to utilize fat reasonably well. If you're a very inefficient new rider, chances are you're going to be super, obviously, inefficient.
Yeah.
And you're going to require more carbohydrate to manage whatever riding you're doing.
Interesting.
So if you're training for the Ride 100 and this is your first thing, that 100 miles, like you're going to be your goal, then you need to be fueling significantly more, aiming for minimum 60 grams of carbohydrate per hour. I'll be taking that from about 45 minutes into the ride, and that's going to help maintain blood glucose through the whole ride, and they can also improve their recovery afterwards if you are going to do multiple days. Or it will also, for someone who's doing 100 miles, there's still going to be an immunosuppression effect of that. The grandeur of it will be defined about how well trained they are. So maintaining higher carbohydrate amounts per hour will also improve recovery and reduce risk or incidence of illness afterwards.
And I suppose there's no great damage if you're consuming too much.
I mean, if it's not for a race, you can easily make those options easily digesting great choices, whether that's saurine, whether that's like rice cakes, whether that's homemade bars, banana bread recipe,
jam
that
sandwich.
We had a ride a few years ago now. One of the guys brings out a burrito. He made a burrito, wraps it up, and just pulls out. It was amazing. It was like, fair play, mate. Like,
yeah, if you can get it down.
That's
keep it down.
Yeah, what? We were stopped fixing a puncture, and he
just crack it on.
Oh, Tom Coles, yeah.
It's not a nutrition thing, it's just funny.
Yeah, the first time he joined one of our rides, this is years ago, this is like 2014 or something. And he rode down from London. The guys were leaving then and there. He goes, oh, can I just quickly have some toast with jam? I was like, yeah. So we quickly made it for him, and he literally just grabbed it off the plate and straight in his back pocket. It was like, right, you've got jam all over your clothes, but you know, whatever, it worked for him. Question from Tim: how good is beer for recovery?
Yeah
mentally very good,
yeah.
Psychologically,
we'll take it, move on.
I mean, the alcohol free one they say about being, you know, isotonic, but it's alcohol free, so technically is it a beer?
I mean 0.01 or something.
Again,
like end of a ride, you know we have a thing that we do in the summer called the Druids. I'm about to sort of say the biggest ride, but let's face it, some of these guys have a ride after 40K. But just that feeling of, you know, camaraderie, and everyone has a beer afterwards.
Why not?
But it's not really the best thing to be consuming, I suppose.
No, it's going to suppress muscle protein synthesis, which is the stimulation that you want to have by having sufficient protein, which is that adaption recovery process.
Gotcha.
So alcohol will do that.
Hope you're listening, Jay. We need to make some changes.
But it will make you forget all the facts.
Amazing. Really good question here from Jackie. Thoughts on fasting? What are the effects, and are there any benefits? Does it have dangers? And is there a risk of ending up ketotonic?
It's a really good question. It's still spoken about a lot. There's a lot of caveats that come with fasted training. So first, if you're doing fasted training to try and drop fat, then that's a fallacy, because ultimately, if you have two identical days, identical people, everything's identical, and you go for a ride, you burn 1,000 calories, and you go for another, and then the other day that's identical, it's 1,000 calories as well. One of them is fed, one of them is fasted. Both of them, you've burned exactly the same amount of calories, so it's impossible to suggest you're going to burn more fat in one than the other, because you've only burnt the same amount of 1,000 calories.
Yeah.
So if you're doing fasted training to burn fat, and you have identical situations, it's not going to make any difference. And even if they're non-identical, essentially, it won't make a difference to burning more fat. If you're doing it to try and get fitter quicker, there is, you know, some great research about increases of the ability to create aerobic cells after fasted training if you finish in a glycogen-depleted state, which is the important part. So if you have had... if you're not depleted, it probably needs to be at least 90 minutes.
Yeah.
That has been hypothesized, but there's no papers currently showing over a long period of time that that will actually improve performance. And actually the guy who brought that, that pioneered that, it was the nutritionist for Bike Exchange, and I had a good chat with him at the top of a mountain in the tour.
I mean, are there any riders that are fasting?
Your riders will do fasted rides. Yeah, I definitely...
In training.
Okay, yeah, training. Fine. So, like, you will improve your ability to oxidize fat at higher heart rates. That will definitely happen. So fat adaption, I guess.
Yeah.
But you only need to do it 1 to 2 times a week on endurance-based rides.
Okay.
High intensity rides, you always need to feed fuel yourself for them. And then she is right?
Yeah, Jackie.
She also asked about, are there any risks?
Is there a risk of ending up ketotonic?
You won't go into ketogenic state, no, not from one like fasted ride or anything.
Yeah.
That needs to be consistent over a period of time. Mm. Also needs to be low carb day.
Yeah.
Overall.
So that's getting your body, quote unquote, fat adapted. So
yeah, you are going to improve your ability to burn fat at a higher heart rate. It's like a zone 2 heart rate will increase. But once again, if you're a super inefficient rider, just focus on getting good at riding and eating on the bike. You want to enjoy your bike ride, right?
I think that's it. That's for me, and you know, kind of for what we try and sort of communicate here from the stories. Like if you really get a lot out of having the fastest bike and, you know, kind of being so strict on yourself, and if that really makes you happy, then great.
Mm.
But if you're doing that at the detriment of going out and enjoying your ride, and that could be racing or it could just be a social ride with friends, if you're doing that and you're not enjoying it because of these restrictions you're placing on yourself, then just stop.
Mm.
Just kind of make the most of going out and riding. As you say, ride more, you'll get better.
Yeah,
you will get better. It's just time on the bike and yeah, you're going to improve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. And the negatives potentially is that you will suppress your immune system to a higher level if you do low carb training.
Really
or faster training. So.
All right. Well, we'll start to wrap things up. Just probably one or two more questions. I mean, something we covered. We've got a question here from Chris Pavin. How many calories are in a post-ride meal for the guys?
I'd say 500, 600, 800-ish. Yeah. It's probably about 300 grams of rice, which is about 100 grams of carbs. And then like a large fillet of chicken or something. Like a 20 to 30 gram portion of protein and a sort of 90 to 100 gram portion of carbs. Mm. What, 600, 700 calories or something?
It's about 600 calories.
Yeah. So a protein shake as well is a couple, 300 or so.
Yeah.
Question here from Pete Clifton. Is sugar my friend or foe for endurance ride?
Yeah, completely.
Friend.
Yeah, completely friend.
Great. Good. That's what we'd like to hear. Love a bit of sugar.
Also, learn to love rice.
Burrito. Who is it? Chris McGovern. Chris McGovern's probably going to break out like just like a pot, like a little like steam thing of like coconut rice or something.
Any rice. It's all good.
Love it.
I loved a bit of marzipan on the bike, I have to say.
Yeah.
And I used to do ready roll icing.
I'm into like,
can't get on with that.
I know you don't like
if
it's good in winter when it's cold. Like
probably the best thing that I ever had when we rode to Paris. We stopped at like a petrol station. There wasn't a lot, and I felt like something fresh. I just wasn't up for like a bar or sweets or anything. So I got this punnet of cherry tomatoes.
Yeah,
it was amazing. Yeah, it was great. It just these little kind of like fresh little puff in my mouth.
Yeah,
every few cases.
Hey, great. Don't forget the humble banana as well.
Humble banana.
It comes in its own wrapper.
Biodegradable.
Yep.
Very easy.
Amen. Have you seen there's some there's some people that are making like pulled pork, quote unquote pork,
banana peel. I've seen
which
bacon
is, surely it's toxic. No, anyway,
I've seen like fake bacon banana peels, which is quite cool.
That's crazy.
All right, one final question. I'm not sure what this is, but hopefully you do. From Match Kitos, L carnitine for losing weight and boosting endurance in the base season, yes or no?
No. So I think some of the research that came out with that you needed to take the supplement alongside like 70 grams of carbohydrate every time you took it on.
Okay.
There's not enough efficacy to say just be in a calorie deficit, mate.
All right. So yeah, calorie. Yeah, exactly. How to lose weight, calorie deficit, real simple.
Yeah.
And learn to love rice.
Yeah.
All right, guys, look, we'll wrap it up there. This has been a long one, but I'm so grateful for your time. I think, you know, it'd be great to have you guys back maybe later in the year after you finish the season.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Have a bit of a debrief.
Give you some stories of the peloton.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, I just think like the certainly one of the takeaways I've taken from this is even though you guys are working at a high level, there is still this level of simplicity where it's just like, you know, good food. Make sure, you know, they're, you know, fueling appropriately.
Yeah.
Carbs are your friend. That's it. Yeah. What more can you do? And all the best. I'd love to hear more about your doctorate and what you're doing.
Cheers.
Yeah. But yeah, Owen, Will, thank you so much. Appreciate it. All thank the best with this this season.
Mm.
Shout out to the best dressed team in the peloton this year.
100%.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we'll get some big wins. I mean, that's the real exciting bit.
When
we get wins and when we get, I mean, that's what we're there for at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks so much, Jordan.
We'll be rooting for you guys.
So much.
Cheers, guys.
Awesome. Cheers.